Welcome back to The Book Show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
We're talking about books and to the people who write them. And we're going to be bringing on Andrew Carroll. Andrew is the editor of War Letters. And he has a collection of 200 letters.
Yeah, I guess
letters.
You can't call him the writer of War Letters, huh?
He's not. Yeah, that's right. He's not the writer. He is the editor. I think what's most extraordinary is he's got this legacy project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a national nonprofit initiative that works to honor and remember those who served this nation in wartime by seeking out and preserving these letters. And I just can't imagine the effort and the time that it took to put that together and to organize it. And this guy's done it. And this is a pretty young guy.
Yep.
I think he's in his mid-30s. So why don't we bring Andrew on the show?
Andrew, are you there?
Good evening. How are you all doing?
We're doing great.
Good, Andrew. Welcome to The Book Show.
Good to be here.
Glad to have you. I tell you what, this is really one of the most interesting, riveting books that I've ever read. And I know it's a compilation of letters. I guess I'm going to call it a book. But it is just really, really
kind of makes
fascinating.
It easier to read, too, because you get this, you read this segment and you can sit and think about it and then go on to the next one.
Yeah, and I just want to compliment you. You did a great job selecting these letters.
Well, thank you. And as you said, I really can't take credit for the letters because they're all written by real soldiers and Marines and airmen and war nurses and people from all different walks of life who've been in wartime. And even some letters from the home front. And they're all previously unpublished letters. These have never been seen before. These are what people have sent us from all over the country. They pulled out of their attics, their basements, their closets. And a lot of them are from World War II, but there are many from the Civil War, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War. We even have emails relating to 9/11, which we added to the paperback. And it's just to show, really, that the spectrum of emotions and experiences that people have had throughout America's wars.
Let me ask you about your background. Before you started the Legacy Project, what did you do?
I still do this. I run a nonprofit literacy group that gives away poetry books, and that's how I was really better known. I started with Joseph Brodsky, the late Russian Nobel laureate, and we were putting, and we still do this, we put poetry books in hotel rooms, we give them out for free on trains and in all sorts of offbeat, somewhat quirky places to get people reading. And I still do that as my real job. The Legacy Project, which is completely separate, focuses on finding and preserving these war letters. And that's an ongoing mission. And we're all volunteer, and this is a labor of love with myself and a few other people who help out. And when Dear Abby did the column on us, this is about 98, saying, you know, readers, if you have a letter you think is really significant, send a photocopy to Andy at this address, we just got inundated. I mean, there were like tens of thousands of war letters came pouring in from around the country. And again, we're still looking for material. This was never an effort just to do a book, and all the money from the book is given to veterans groups. It's about getting these letters saved.
I see. Now, what inspired you to start the Legacy Project?
You know, I'm not a veteran. I don't really come from a military family. My father was just too young for World War II, and my brother was too young for Vietnam. But what happened was right before Christmas of 89, our house burned down, and everything got wiped out in the fire. Nobody was hurt, which is obviously the most important thing, but we lost everything. And it was really that experience of losing the letters, and I had nothing historically significant, but just, you know, you lose your personal letters, and you think of all the things that are recorded from old girlfriends or just buddies overseas, whatever it may be, and they're gone.
Sentimental value.
Sentimental value, absolutely. And I even had a friend who was over in China during the Tiananmen Square massacre, and he was in Beijing writing letters home about what it was like to be there, and they're absolutely riveting. So those are all gone. And that's when I just got the idea to start, you know, encouraging people to save their letters, and then it just kept growing and growing.
Mm. When did you really get started in earnest then? Was it before the Dear Abby letter or after?
I think before the Dear Abby column, we had about 8 letters that people had sent to us or that I had found just through serendipity or word of mouth, and it was really the Dear Abby column, because then after that happened, word got out that we had this big treasure trove of never-before-seen war letters. Every single war in America's history is represented. These went back to the Revolution, and all the way up at that time to, I think, we were in the middle of Bosnia. And Nightline did a whole half hour on it, and Time Magazine did a cover story with some of our letters, and it just kept growing and growing and growing.
Hmm. What was the selection criteria for the letters that you chose for this book?
As someone who's not a history buff, I wanted to make sure that it was riveting for people who, you know, don't run out and buy the first war book or military history book that comes on the market. For people who are almost skeptical about it, and like, you know, you got to convince me this is interesting and dramatic. And so I picked letters that I thought, you know, just from the very first line, grabbed your attention and didn't let go.
Right. Okay. So that was the criteria.
That
then?
Was the overall thing. And now I love letters that are eyewitness accounts of, you know, whether it's a major battle, or we have a letter who was at Tojo's bedside after Tojo tried to kill himself. Tojo was sort of the Hitler of the Pacific. He was the architect of Pearl Harbor, sort of the Osama bin Laden of his day. And he doesn't get a lot of credit in the history books, but he was probably the most hated man in America. And during World War II, at the end of it, he saw the Nazis getting rounded up to be tried as war criminals. He knew the Japanese were next, so he shot himself, but he missed his heart. And so we rushed into his house in Japan, this is in 45, took him to an American military hospital and kept him alive. And a young medic was called in to sort of watch over him, check his blood pressure. So while he's in the hospital room, he writes a letter home. You know, dear mom and dad, you are not going to believe where I am now. And it's like you're right there in the hospital room at Tojo's bedside. And that letter was bought at a yard sale for 50 cents.
Oh, wow.
And someone sent us a copy of it. And, like, you know, you might be interested in this. And we were. We have another guy who was in Adolf Hitler's private apartment in Munich. And he wrote a letter home on Hitler's stationery about Dachau. Because he had just seen it. Eisenhower ordered the troops to go to Dachau. And then he and his men were off to Munich to, you know, make sure the Nazis were out of the high command was out. And so they're just, you know, we've got letters written during the Tet Offensive, during Desert Storm, during Chosin Reservoir in Korea, Shiloh, Gettysburg, all these vivid eyewitness accounts of what it's like to be there in the middle of battle. And then we have letters from the home front and things that were going on back in the States during these war times that, you know, wives and kids and, you know, people related to soldiers were explaining to them while they were away.
Mm-hmm. Did you come across letters that in your estimation were just a little too graphic or a little too personal to be published?
Well, all these were cleared with the veterans or the families themselves. And so we do have a letter written by a man whose wife was having an affair while he was away, and he was sort of writing back to her saying, listen, you know, you got to shape up. And conversely, we have letters by women who heard that their, you know, husbands were having affairs overseas. And we always offered to take the names out, and the family said, no, we want people to know that this is another casualty of warfare, that relationships were damaged by these great distances. There are a couple letters in the book that are very graphic, but we forewarn the reader. We say, you know, this letter contains graphic accounts of battle. You may want to skip it. There's only one letter I've ever come across that I thought was probably too graphic to include, and the gentleman actually decided, who wrote it, that he would do his own book. And so he was very gracious about it. He's like, listen, I just got to save it for my, you know, my own memoirs. And it was an account, I won't go through in great detail, but it was actually a training mission, and a plane caught on fire on the ground. And one of the men fell out of the plane and just begged for his other men to do something to him. And the account of it is one of the most chilling things I've ever read. Mm. And so those letters are out there. But generally what we put in the book are not as terrible.
Mm. Now, here's something that I think a lot of civilians who have never been in the military have a hard time understanding. But explain to our audience the importance of letters to a soldier, not only writing them but receiving them. And it seems like it's important every war.
Oh, morale, my gosh.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, what is it about the letters that is just so
important? There's no theme that is more consistent throughout every generation of soldiers, you know, Marines, airmen who go off to serve than write to me. That letters were everything to them. It's the one tangible connection to the home front. They want to know how people are doing. They want to know that they're remembered. It's amazing to me. I've been going around to military bases on this country and hoping to go overseas later on. How many American troops really do feel like they're forgotten? And they're not self-pitying. They just realize Americans are, you know, onto their daily lives too. But there is a desire for people to know that they're over there, that they're risking their lives, and that they're making a lot of sacrifices. And letters are so important to them, just to know that someone's thinking of them. And we all know, I mean, that's not relegated just to soldiers. We all know that feeling of getting a handwritten letter from a dear friend or loved one in the mail. It's great. And we're now seeing the advent of email, which is, you know, very important to servicemen and women overseas. And in fact, we're doing a big push right now to find letters and emails from Afghanistan and from other areas, people fighting the war on terrorism. And anyone who thinks they have something or knows someone who's over there can go to our website, warletters.com. It's just like the title of the book, warletters.com,
right.
All one word. And there's information on how to reach us. And there's also information on how to preserve your letters. And these letters are the best record we have of what these men and women experienced, what they wrote during times of war. And even if you don't want to send us, we actually prefer people don't send us originals, just photocopies. Whether you keep your originals or give them to a museum, whatever, if you want information on how to preserve them, it's all on the website.
Mm-hmm. You actually stole my thunder because my follow-up on the handwritten was about emails, because I'm assuming, for example, in Afghanistan with the use of computers and technology now, that a lot, maybe most letters now, are going to be written via email.
Yeah, because they're immediate also. I mean, I got quite a few emails from aircraft friends on aircraft carriers over there.
Is that right?
Really?
Yes.
And these were personal friends, or these were there are a lot of emails that get circulated on the internet.
No, these are personal friends we email back and forth.
I'd like to talk to you about those.
Yeah.
we're interested in finding more. Did they go off and were they, did they ever hit land in various capacities, or were they always on the ship?
I'd have to go back and look at them. Basically, I'm a car collector. I love restoring cars, and these are fellow car collectors, and we're talking about that kind of stuff. I guess helping, keeping their mind off what their normal duty is out there, and these are correspondents regarding that kind of stuff.
Got it. Okay, well, that's what we're looking for. In answer to your question about emails versus letters, it surprised me how many people in Afghanistan, our American forces, are actually writing letters home. One guy actually wrote a letter on the back of an MRE, which his wife is going to send us a copy of it. And there's something about, I mean, emails are great because they're quick, as you said, and they're convenient, and that's for the loved ones who want to know that their soldiers are alive and well. It's perfect. But for history's sake, there's nothing like a handwritten letter,
right?
Because not only do you have the description of whatever's going on, by the quality of the paper, we have Civil War letters that are ripped and torn. We've got Battle of the Bulge letters where the ink is blurred because of melted snow. You know, these guys are writing in trenches. It's snowing all around them, and you get that sense from the quality of the letter. Or that Adolf Hitler letter, you know, again, that was literally written on Hitler stationery, and you see the gold embossed lettering that says Adolf Hitler, and it's absolutely chilling to think that guy was right there in that circumstance, talking about his hatred of what the Nazis had done at Dachau. And so you really do have a historic element that's just so much more meaningful.
Mm-hmm. What about the American Revolution and the Spanish-American War? Why don't you go back that far?
Well, we have letters from that period. They're not in the book. The book is the Civil War to the present day for a couple reasons. One is we didn't have enough letters. You're talking about an 8-year war with the American Revolution, and we really tried to tell the complete story of these wars through the letters, and there are just too many back and forth. Whereas you look at Civil War, we really do cover pretty much all the major conflicts of that war, and which is, you know, a long war as well. And the other thing is there's a greater intimacy with the Civil War, whereas the Revolution is so far away. We have three letters in the book. This was astonishing to me. There are three letters in the book that were contributed by the grandchildren of Civil War soldiers. Hmm. These are people who said, my grandfather wrote this letter at Shiloh or wherever it may have been. I mean, just incredible to think of how young this country is. And so the Civil War seemed an appropriate place to start. And it was also a different kind of war with letters. You know, the first time that there's home delivery, only in the North, but that's when it was started.
Right, I see.
And then you also, in the Revolution, it was a lot of militia, you know, going off, fighting, and then coming back home. There were some letters written, but not the way in the Civil War where they went off for long periods of time. A lot of the best Revolution letters are the pension letters that the men wrote after the war, asking to get their pensions and describing the battles they had fought in.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I really enjoy about this book is you preface and sometimes have an afterword for most, if not all, of these letters. And it's mostly an educational thing. You put these letters into context. What you do.
And we call them head notes, and there's an after note. If there's a question of whether the person survived or not, you know, if he's writing from, you know, he's a prisoner of war, and you wonder, did he make it out okay? We always try and find out. And I try to weave in not just a brief historical background, so you have a sense of what battle were they fighting in, what were the conditions that led up to it, very, very succinct, but also some anecdotal information. And just to kind of make it more human, but also to give you the context of what it was like to be in that situation.
And did you do the research for that, or is that
That's my contribution to the book, with the writing and the research on that.
Well, you did an excellent job with that.
Well, thank you.
Talk to me about the difficulty in trying to get your hands on letters written by African Americans.
That was the most frustrating thing, and it's something that we're really trying to make a greater effort to solve, a problem we've had. And it's when we got the first 50,000 letters after the Dear Abby campaign, I would estimate, and I have a pretty good sense from the divisions of the different services and so forth, that only about 5 or 6 were from African-American soldiers. And so we did a big push. We have a letter in the book by General Benjamin Davis, and his son actually just passed away. He led the Tuskegee Airmen. But General Davis was the first African-American general in American history, and I really wanted one of his letters in the book, and I finally tracked him down. His family was very gracious about it. And I just want to make sure that people understand what they contributed, and they had sort of dual hardships because they went through all the regular suffering and sacrifices of that normal soldiers go through, and on top of it, they were treated just appallingly. And there's a letter we couldn't put in the book. I came across later. It was written to Yank magazine, and again, we only use letters that have not been published before. And it's written by a black soldier, actually a black officer in the United States, who, while going through Texas, was discriminated against. This is in the 1940s, and he has to eat out by the garbage dumpsters outside of a cafe in this little railroad town, and he watches as a group of German prisoners of war are taken into the rail depot, are sat down, served with waiters. You know, they smoke, they talk, they have a great time. Meanwhile, this guy who's fighting for his country, he outranks everyone involved, is sitting out in the back, you know, eating a sandwich over a dumpster. And it's just the unfairness of that,
right.
and also the more positive aspects of what they contribute are what we wanted to show.
Right, Andrew, we're going to take a break, okay?
Yep.
Stay with us. We're talking to Andrew Carroll, editor of War Letters. This is The Book Show. We're talking about books, and we want to talk with you. Give us a call at 788-0990. This is WLEE Hot Talk 990. We'll be right back.